host, Phil Pozderek, and it's 10 o'clock, Saturday morning, September the 24th, 2011. As always, I want to welcome all my listeners. I want to welcome all of Darren Week's listeners who are tuning in. I want to encourage everyone to stay tuned for Todd McGreevy and Common Sense Revisited immediately after this show, beginning at the noon hour. I need to remind everyone that the Republic Broadcasting Fund Drive is still going on. I forgot to mention this on last week's show. Please give generously. And today, I want to get right to it. I want to talk about the real financial system, not the propaganda you hear on the mainstream media. Now, I want to start out by posing a question or two. Would you let a cab driver or a politician or a lawyer or a baseball player perform brain surgery on you? Of course not. That's a silly question. No one would ever let anyone except a highly trained neurosurgeon operate on them, except under the most dire emergency and circumstance. But it seems no one even questions the fact that, one, politicians are routinely expected to manage the economy. What? Everybody knows central planning doesn't work. The politicians aren't venture capitalists. I mean, we can see that in the mainstream news, you know, by the Solyntra solar panel company bankruptcy. You know, government just shot them a Miller $500 million, which, you know, was flushed by the hand-picked elite's favorite green technology, the absurd, costly, and yes, polluting solar panel. It's never questioned that the Trade Association, known as the British Accredited Registry, who swears allegiance to the Crown Corporation of the London City-State, that's a whole nother story for another time. It's never questioned that this trade association, the Bar Association, writes, implements, and administers the so-called law. It's never questioned that politicians, whom I've said before are professional actors hired to sell you the absolute necessity of the need for government and international bankers. In effect, they're paid professional liars, paid to tell everyone within earshot exactly what he wants to hear, how the Mac Daddy government is going to take care of all your needs and wants and desires, and it's all voluntary, it's all constitutional, it's all by your consent done on and for your behalf. Until people begin to understand the roots of the problem, they'll never be able to understand how to frame an argument to defeat the powers that be, whom have carefully orchestrated a virtual slave state with cages of positively unconstitutional statutes and codes that they call laws. The indecipherable wordsmithing of obscurity, a law which is virtually never taught to the average student in the federal public school system. Those of us with socialist surveillance number, we don't need to know the law, but at the same time, we're required to know the law. An immense body of indecipherable gobbledygook that they can use their discretion to interpret, and they can even change the meanings of the words. As you can hear, it's time to go for a word from our sponsors. I'm Phil Pozderek, and you're listening to Positively Unconstitutional. We'll be back in just a minute.
Did you know that the water you're drinking may contain over 2,000 different contaminants? From hormone-disrupting and mind-altering chemicals like fluoride in pharmaceuticals to newly emerging contaminants like radiation and other hybrid chemicals that water treatment plants don't screen out of our drinking water. PureEffectFilters.com has a breakthrough filter solution to effectively reduce the widest range of such contaminants, including the radiation coming from the Fukushima disaster. In addition, the filters will also revitalize your water by releasing natural minerals and electrolytes while increasing pH and antioxidant levels. Safeguard and revitalize your drinking water today with a breakthrough PureEffect water filter system. Visit PureEffectFilters.com to learn more. Or contact us today at 1-888-891-4821. That's 1-888-891-4821. 800-891-4821. Call now and take one of the most important steps you'll take to a healthier future.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
And welcome back to Positively Unconstitutional. I'm your host, Phil Posderick, and as I was saying before the break, I pretty much want to get right to it here and start talking about some real things about the financial system. And, you just have to ask yourselves, why would people let this happen? As I was saying before the break, those of us with socialist surveillance numbers, with Social Security numbers, we aren't taught law in school. We don't need to know the law. At the same time, we're expected to know the law. And, of course, it's an immense body of indecipherable gobbledygook. And they can use their discretion, the courts and the administrators and the judges, to interpret even the meaning of words. They can change the meanings at will. And then effectively, they can pass hundreds of thousands of law, which are in direct conflict with natural law. And all by the simple trick of consent. Even though the average citizen doesn't know how he consented or how to withdraw his consent. Now today, I'm going to read an article by Martin Armstrong. You can find it at martinarmstrong.org. And it's called Bound by Theories of the Past. And this article is about the realities of our financial system. It's not what the mainstream media would have you believe. It's not written by some Harvard or some Yale egghead. It's not some, politician's hired Keynesian yes man with a package of managed and manipulated figures, which address his talking points. It's not some hired political hack, who's out there kissing the establishment stinking behind in the hopes of a political favor. This analysis hits the nail on the head. It explains the politicization of the financial system and how this self-serving interest promotes itself at the cost of freedom, liberty, property, and everything else that's, held dear in the American mindset. If you've been watching the mainstream financial news, which I monitor all the time, you'll see that this CEO of PIMCO, his name is Ilarion, he wrote an article last week, and he said that there is at this time a run going on in the French banks by institutional investors And then there was another report that the euro could drop to $1.10 or even to parity with the dollar, a dollar for a dollar. As investors, that's institutional investors, move out of the euro and move back into the dollar for safety. Laugh out loud. Oh, my goodness. People are using the Federal Reserve note for safety. I also wanted to mention that back in May, June, I talked about a low in gold come the end of September, October, and here we are, and we can see this pullback in the bull market here of a couple of $100 to 1642. And so, you know, Martin's, you know, his cycles are pretty strong, so I think this is a buying opportunity for gold and silver, for you gold and silver bugs out there at 31 and 1642. I think he closed on Friday. This these cycles and the reason they work has specifically to do with human nature and psychology. So without any further ramblings from me, here is what I consider to be a very well-written packet of truth, because you can handle it. Here we go. Bound up by theories of the past. I, and this is Martin Armstrong speaking now, was recently interviewed and asked, how is it possible that my reports have exceeded the 400,000 circulation level, more than half that of the New York Times, according to the independent forms that audit the web? The journalist interviewing me had spoken to many readers in the industry and concluded, I write about things nobody else seems to do. The questions caused me to think about what was taking place. It's true that the markets are being driven, alternatively swayed by the laws of supply and demand and by the clamors of political faction. The future expectations are much less shaped by hope than by fear, while the firm edifice of Western civilization, once praised and preserved by the wisdom of ages, is crumbling as the image of a free constitution preserved with decent reverence has devolved onto the arbitrary executive powers of government. Common sense has just vanished. After much reflection on this subject, I concluded that the reason for perhaps obtaining one of the largest readerships in the financial world stems from the fact that this subject matter is not even taught in university. In fact, when the floating exchange rate system was born in 1971, it was a temporary trade negotiating point. There was no grand-scale economic summit with a whole bunch of people gathering around and pontificating on the structure of the world monetary system, as was the case at Bretton Woods in 1944, pictured above. Interviewing traders at top hedge funds, the journalist realized that what I was writing about was important, and many expressed they hoped I would continue to do so as a public service, for the education was vital. This is a sad epitaph on formal education. Of all the people I've been compared to, the one whom I would agree I share a similar background is that of David Ricardo, who lived from 1772 to 1823. For he was a trader who drew upon his experience to construct what he saw as the comparative advantage of nations. I, too, am drawing upon what I have observed as a trader and my work around the world among nations. It's ironic that at the time of Ricardo, economics was not yet a subject taught in any school. It made its first appearance in 1902 at Cambridge University. Here I am, nearly 200 years later, confronted by the similar problem that there is no course yet taught by any university that deals with the modern economy under a floating exchange rate system, and how that has eradicated the entire array of standard economic theories. So let me interject there. I mean, he's saying that in 1971, when the United States defaulted on its payment of its obligations in gold and created the floating exchange rate system, I mean, no one was educated in a floating exchange rate system. There was no courses taught. And this is, you know, is this a haphazard thing? No, somebody's been doing the planning. Somebody's done the work. Somebody's in control of this whole thing. They'd have you believe that it's all random, but it's not. To continue, on top of this, we truly have a paradox in how society ignores history. And the political forces in command simply approach every crisis on an ad hoc basis, as if there were some medieval doctor who starts ripping out body parts until the pain stops. Oops. Well, he is at peace now, for he is with God. Nobody even asks, has this been tried before? Did it work? We are bound by old economic theories constructed during a fixed exchange rate system that no longer exists within a world where capital did not migrate around the globe as fast as it does today. These old theories of the past are so antiquated. We are like Andromeda, bound in chains to a rock by old theories awaiting the next crisis when the Kraken appears. The Kraken, excuse me. In Ricardo's time, economics was really just an offshoot of moral philosophy, which we have not really gotten away from, illuminating why Karl Marx was embraced more as a moral justification, setting up this eternal battle, what people thought was between rich and poor. Yet the rich, here it is, listen carefully, the rich were supplanted by government. Much of these ideas that impede economics emerge from this moral foundation that has thoroughly deprived economics of any meaningful scientific status. This morality concept has set economics on the wrong path, drifting away from a real science, spiraling down the dark corridors of too many minds that leads to prejudice, hatred, war, and death because of this materialistic obsession. The reason economics has been anything but a real science emerges from this moral philosophy route, where instead of observing how the economy actually functions, we have set out upon a course to alter its behavior, transforming it into this nebulous object based upon a concept of fairness, which is like the definition of rich, that is, anyone who has more money than oneself. The Kraken is the legendary sea monster who can be appeased by a sacrifice. Today, we no longer offer up virgins, but classes of society that are just as naive. New ideas are rejected out of hand largely because people are instinctively still trying to fit them into a slot within moral philosophy. This concept of fairness was divorced from reason, and it was no longer how much someone paid, but it shifted its focus to how much was someone left with after taxes. By 1945, the top income tax bracket was 94%. Fascism grabbed hold in the United States, and it was not how much one paid that was fair, but the rich had to pay a higher percentage, and that was seen as fair. Hence, it was how much was someone left with rather than what they paid that became the focus. A greatly overlooked attribute. This was further complicated by the failure to understand that money was neither tangible nor fixed. Thanks to Marx, it was always about the money. It was the panic of 1792 that caused Ben Franklin to coin the phrase, "The only thing certain is death and taxes." I agree with the former, but the latter has seen the best of times. Another word from our sponsors. You're listening to Positively Unconstitutional. I'm Phil Pozderek. We'll be right back.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medication. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this ExtendoVite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous-based metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, and metal expansion and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate on itself, as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphite. It also offers the tremendous benefit of being non-toxic. It is used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
And welcome back to Positively Unconstitutional. Sorry about that delay there. Having trouble finding my way back to the story. In any case, in that last paragraph there, just before the break, you'll notice that he said, this was further complicated by the failure to understand that money was neither tangible nor fixed. Thanks to Karl Marx, it was always about the money. In the Panic of 1792, it was the Panic of 1792 that caused Benjamin Franklin to coin the phrase, the only thing certain is death and taxes. I agree with the former, but the latter, taxes, has seen the best of times. While the earliest imposition of an income tax took place in China in 10 A.D., and led to the overthrow of the emperor just 13 years later, the origin of the income tax in the United States upon individuals is wrongly cited as the passage of the 16th Amendment, which happened in July of 1909, ratified in February of 1913. The imposition of the income tax in the U.S. goes back even further. If you know your history during the Civil War, the so-called Civil War, the Republican Congress passed the Revenue Act of 1861, which included a tax on personal incomes to help pay war expenses. The tax was repealed 10 years later. Previously, the U.S. had few taxes between 1791 and 1802. The United States government was supported by internal taxes on distilled spirits, carriages, refined sugar, tobacco and snuff, and property sold at auction, corporate bonds, and slaves. The high cost of the War of 1812 brought about the nation's first sales tax on gold, silverware, jewelry, and watches. In 1817, Congress did away with all internal taxes, relying on tariffs upon imported goods to provide sufficient funds for running the government. It was the Civil War where this idea of an income tax was born. Congress amended the Internal Revenue Act of 1864, subsequently creating, at the time, a national licensing requiring certain businesses, including those of selling lottery tickets and retail dealings in liquor, to obtain a license from the United States federally to operate. There was much disagreement, for in New York and New Jersey, selling lottery tickets was a crime. Just as in Massachusetts, retailing liquors at the time was an offense against public morals and was subject to indictment, fine, and imprisonment. To sell a beer back then, just as drugs, you're illegal today. This clash between federal policy, then seeking revenue contrary to some states that regarded that activity to be a crime, resulted in true absurdity. Congress cannot, constitutionally, punish for a refusal to pay for a license to commit crime, or constitutionally levy a tax for the privilege of committing it. However, Congress amended the act, replacing the word license with imposing a special tax. There they go, changing the meanings of words, making special words up. It's a special tax, not a license. And thus it was held that it was not unconstitutional to impose a special tax on illegal conduct. Yet the failing to pay the tax was an indictable offense, which absurdly resulted in someone having to inform the government they were violating the state law, yet were paying a tax to the government on such activity. Mr. Chief Justice Chase delivered the decision in License Tax Cases. In 1866, he wrote, "It is true that the power of Congress to tax is a very extensive power. It is given in the Constitution with only one exception and only two qualifications. Congress cannot tax exports, and it must impose direct taxes by the rule of apportionment and indirect taxes by the rule of uniformity. Thus limited and thus only, it reaches every subject and may be exercised at discretion." Again, there's that word, discretion. They have discretion to do whatever they want. In 1894, Congress enacted a flat-rate federal income tax, which was ruled unconstitutional the following year by the U.S. Supreme Court because it was a direct tax, expressly forbidden by the Constitution. In August of 1894, the Wilson-Gorman Act was passed following the Panic of 1893, which was a tax and tariff measure. It levied a 2% tax on incomes of $4,000 or more, which was only 2% of American taxpayers at the time. The tax was applied to gains, profits, and income derived from any kind of property, rents, interest, dividends, or salaries from any profession, trade, employment, or vocation, plus inheritance and gifts. The tax was also applied to net profits of corporations, companies, and associations. This prompted the shareholders of corporations to immediately sue to halt their corporations from paying the tax. The various cases were consolidated into Pollock versus Farmer Loan and of the U.S. Constitution, which provides no capitation or their other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. I'm sorry, the name of that is Pollock versus the Farmers Loan and Trust Company, 1895. As you can hear, we have to go for another word from our sponsors. You're listening to Positively Unconstitutional. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Berkey Purification Systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. Berkeys are used worldwide under normal, hostile, and emergency environments. Securing your access to good-tasting, sparkling, wholesome drinking water can be harder than you might expect. Water is often laced with chlorine, lead, high levels of harmful bacteria, and other unwanted chemicals and contaminants. Even bottled water can contain these contaminants, and moreover, it's expensive. Other purification systems are inferior. Most do remove pathogenic bacteria, and many remove the beneficial minerals that your body needs. Perhaps that's why Berkey systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. This simple, highly effective method of microporous, self-sterilizing, and recleanable black Berkey purification elements bring you the finest water purification system available anywhere. Call today, 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Free shipping for a limited time only.
And welcome back to Positively Unconstitutional. And just before the break, I was talking about, again, Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust Company. And it's, I believe, Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, which provides no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census of enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Now, this case was 1895, was accepted by the Supreme Court in January of 1895. The plaintiffs argued that the income tax would induce class welfare that would lead to communism, anarchy, and then the ever-following despotism. Chief Justice Fuller wrote the opinion that demonstrates the dangers of a Republican government where elected representatives fail in their duty to defend the people and out of their own self-interest amend the Constitution. He said, the mother country had taught the colonists, in the contest waged to establish that taxes could not be imposed by the sovereign, except as they were granted by the representatives of the realm, that self-taxation constituted the main security against oppression. As Burke declared in his speech on conciliation with America, the defenders of the excellence of the English Constitution took infinite pains to inculcate as a fundamental principle that in all monarchies the people must, in effect, themselves immediately possess the power of granting their own money, or no shadow of liberty could subsist. The principle was that the consent of those who were expected to pay it was essential to the validity of any tax. Historically, kings could not tax the people without their consent. The only time taxation was allowed was to defend the nation in time of war. Congress amended the Constitution to overrule that long historical foundation that existed since the Dark Ages and rejected the wisdom of the founding fathers, supporting instead the moral philosophy of Karl Marx because it supported handing to government the idea of being able to manage the economy. The 1862 Civil War income tax was a forerunner of our modern income tax, in that it was based on the principles of graduated or progressive taxation and of withholding income at the source. During the Civil War, a person earning from $600 to $10,000 per year paid tax at the rate of 3%. Those with incomes of more than $10,000 paid taxes at a higher rate. Additional sales and excise taxes were added, and an inheritance tax also made its debut. In 1866, Internal Revenue collections reached their highest point in the nation's 90-year history, more than $310 million. In nominal terms, this was not reached again until 1911. Yet, it was the Act of 1862 that established the Office of Commissioner of Internal Revenue. The commissioner was given the power to assess, levy, and collect taxes, and the right to enforce the tax laws through seizure of property and income and through prosecution. The powers and authority remain very much the same today. In 1868, once more, Congress turned toward taxation efforts, this time on tobacco and distilled spirits, while eliminating the income tax in 1872. It had a short-lived revival in 1894 and 95 following the Panic of 1893, as government was desperate and it approached bankruptcy in 1896 due to their own mismanagement. It was against this backdrop that Marxism was able to take hold in the United States and become part of the institution of government before the Russian Revolution, and those who supported Marx saw the bloodletting. Because the Supreme Court declared Marxism effectively unconstitutional in 1895, Congress set about carving out itself a new source of funding by altering the Constitution to circumvent the Supreme Court. In 1913, the 16th Amendment to the Constitution made the Marxist income tax a permanent fixture in the U.S. tax system. This 16th Amendment gave Congress the legal authority to tax income and then to imprison anyone who resisted. That decree opened the door to the escalating expansion of government, put in place tyranny that not even former monarchs could get away with. The lack of term limits created a perpetual ruling class among the politicians that established government as the primary antagonist against the people. By fiscal year 1918, annual internal revenue collections for the first time passed the billion-dollar mark, rising to $5.4 billion by 1920. With the advent of World War II, employment increased, as did tax collections, to $7.3 billion. The withholding tax on wages was introduced in 1943 as the nation became much more Marxist, yet allowing private ownership while effectively adopting a totalitarian fascist system, raising the top income tax rate to 94% in 1945. Now, the number of taxpayers increased to 60 million and tax collections to $43 billion by 1945 as the quote-unquote rich were becoming slaves and they borrowed from the worker without paying him the dignity of any interest. In 1981, in conjunction with the peak in the public wave on the economic confidence model, Congress enacted the largest tax cut in U.S. history, approximately $750 billion over 6 years. The tax reduction, however, was partially offset by two tax acts in 1982 and 1984 that attempted to raise approximately $265 billion. On October 22, 1986, President Reagan signed into law the Tax Reform Act of 1986, one of the most far-reaching reforms of the United States tax system since the adoption of the income tax. The top tax rate on individual income was lowered from 50% to 28%, the lowest it had been since 1916. Tax preferences were eliminated to make up most of the revenues. In an attempt to remain revenue neutral, the act called for a $120 billion increase in business and a decrease in individual taxation over 5 years. The Revenue Reconciliation Act of 1990 was signed into law on November the 5th that year, following previous acts of 1987, 1988, and 1989. It was the 1987 act that set in motion the S&L crisis, for it removed the tax incentives for real estate, creating a one-way market of sellers because of, you guessed it, taxes. The 1990 revision provided a number of substantive provisions, yet this was small in comparison with the 1986 Act. The emphasis on the 1990 Act was increased taxes on the wealthy. Sound familiar? President Clinton, on August 10, 1993, signed the Revenue Reconciliation Act of 1993 into law. The Act's purpose was claimed to reduce by approximately $496 billion the federal deficit that would otherwise have accumulated in fiscal years 1994 through 98. In 97, Clinton signed another tax act which cut taxes by $152 billion and included a cut in capital gains tax for individuals, a $500 per child tax credit, and tax incentives for education. President George W. Bush signed a series of tax cuts into law, with the largest being the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001. This was estimated to save taxpayers $1.3 trillion over 10 years, that arguably made it the third largest tax cut since World War II. The Bush tax cut created a new lowest rate, 10%, for the first several thousand dollars earned. It also established a slow schedule of incremental tax cuts that would eventually double the child tax credit from $500 to $1,000. Additionally, this tax reform adjusted brackets so that middle-income couples owed the same tax as comparable singles and reduced the top four tax rates from 28% to 25%, from 31% to 28%, from 36% to 33%, and from 39.6% to 35%. Just to, you know, kind of mention, doesn't it seem odd that in 1986, Reagan lowered the top rate from 50% to 28%, but then by 2001, we had to lower the highest rate from 39.6% to 35%. But of course, you know, the purpose of the Reagan tax cuts was what? Well, it got rid of all the deductions. See, it simplified the whole problem. Now you didn't have anything to write off. Your rate was lower, but you still paid the same in tax. Then, of course, they just raised the rate back up to where it was, but now there's no write-offs. You know, it's just it's the most criminal Ponzi game I can, you know, even, who thinks of this stuff? It's so criminal. It's so evil. It's just incredible, actually. To continue. The Jobs and Growth Tax Relief and Reconciliation Act of 2003 accelerated the tax rate cuts that had been enacted in 2001 and temporarily reduced the tax rate on capital gains and dividends to 15%. In 2004, the United States was forced to eliminate a corporate tax provision that had been ruled illegal by the World Trade Organization. Along with the tax hike, Congress passed a cornucopia of tax breaks, which for individuals included an option to deduct the payment of whichever state taxes were higher, sales or income taxes. The tax bills signed in 2005 and then again in 2006 extended through 2010 the favorable rates on capital gains and dividends that had been enacted in 2003. However, it did raise the exemption levels for the alternative minimum tax and it enacted new tax incentives designed to persuade individuals to save more for retirement. Bear with me, people. I know this is getting confusing, but bear with me. There's some real good stuff here in just a second. Now we are once again in an economic downturn, as was the case after the Panic of 1893. And once more we hear how the rich do not pay their fair share, when in reality it is always about government spending more than they should, blaming the people as always. No matter how much the people paid in taxes, it's never going to be enough. The tax code in the United States is anything but stable. Did you hear all those dates? Those are all changes in the tax code. I mean, they change the tax code virtually every year. Politicians only see things through their own self-interest and fail to understand the economic impact of what they are actually doing. They will not act to prevent an economic crisis, but only respond with more criminal prosecutions seeking retribution to ease the pain of the people. This is getting old. The income tax has been the single greatest threat to long-term stability. Did you hear that? The income tax has been the single greatest threat to long-term stability and has destroyed society as a whole, driving capital and jobs out of the country. Let me read that again. The income tax has been the single greatest threat to long-term stability and has destroyed society as a whole. It drives capital and jobs out of the country. They blame the greed of the corporations and capital, portraying their migration is to maximize profits. They fail to address that the real driver is the consumer. They dare not conduct a poll asking if two products are of equal quality, would the consumer be willing to pay 25% more simply because one product is manufactured domestically while the cheaper version is imported? Increasing union wages is not a victory against the employer, for the prices are passed on to the consumer, and if they curtail their buying, then manufacture leaves. This is a dynamic situation that is not just one-dimensional. Adding payroll taxes increases the cost of labor in the United States compared to other nations. Government loves to point the finger at the rich, but who are they? Everyone assumes it must be the guy who earns more than them. The visions are of the super rich, when indeed it is $250,000 of household income or more. The desperate drive for taxation income is tearing the economic system apart. The Iowa Supreme Court has upheld a decision, KFC Court versus Iowa Department of Revenue, in the Iowa Supreme Court, December 30th of 2010, that an out-of-state intangible holding company that's licensed trademarks to restaurant franchisees was subject to Iowa corporate income tax on revenue earned from the use of its trademark within Iowa. By licensing franchise within Iowa, the court found that the taxpayer received the benefit of an orderly society within the state and as a result was subject to income tax that otherwise satisfied the requirements of the Commerce Clause. This is now threatening to subject every company to taxation in every state when it itself is not even present there. Amazon was forced to abandon California for similar reasons of state greed. As always, the economic decline turns government against the people, helping to destroy the very fabric of society. Wow, is that a great end of the paragraph? Let me read that sentence again. As always, the economic decline turns government against the people, helping to destroy the very fabric of society. Instability. The greatest problem presented by taxation is the one, constant instability of raising and lowering taxes. It is not even the empirical level of taxes, as it is in the constant yo-yo of this back and forth, and two, this concept of fairness is not judged by the amount someone pays, but by the disproportionate percentage someone pays. This Marxist approach is unconstitutional as originally designed. The government can stack the courts with pro-government judges who will always rule in favor of more government power. But that does not make what they decree to be fair or just. If it is positively unconstitutional to discriminate because of race, creed, or affiliation, then it is equally unconstitutional to discriminate based upon what someone earns. Until the courts are made honest, and no former government employee may sit on any bench whatsoever, be they a former prosecutor or politician, and that such terms shall not be for life, but for two-year intervals imported by majority vote of the practicing lawyers in the district, there will be no justice, fairness, and no rule of law. You're listening to Positively Unconstitutional.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror, or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract! A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Aerial spraying, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Did you know that the water you're drinking may contain over 2,000 different contaminants? From hormone-disrupting and mind-altering chemicals like fluoride in pharmaceuticals to newly emerging contaminants like radiation and other hybrid chemicals that water treatment plants don't screen out of our drinking water. PureEffectFilters.com has a breakthrough filter solution to effectively reduce the widest range of such contaminants, including the radiation coming from the Fukushima disaster. In addition, the filters will also revitalize your water by releasing natural minerals and electrolytes while increasing pH and antioxidant levels. Safeguard and revitalize your drinking water today with a breakthrough Pure Effect water filter system. Visit PureEffectFilters.com to learn more or contact us today at 1-888-891-4821. That's 1-888-891-4821. Call now and take one of the most important steps you'll take to a healthier future.
Hey, every day is the weekend. I stay up, so I sleep in. Hey, every day there's a reason to just do it all over again.
And welcome back to Positively Unconstitutional. Yeah. If you listen to the Marxist, you're going to be beat to death with those words, fair, justice, you know. I love Martin here because he understands about the rule of law. This is one of the greatest run-on sentences I've ever heard that I read just before the break there. Let me read that to you again. The government can stack the courts with pro-government judges who will always rule in this favor of more government power. But that does not make what they decree to be fair or just. If it is unconstitutional to discriminate because of race, creed, or affiliation, then it is equally unconstitutional to discriminate based upon what someone earns. Until the courts are made honest, and no former government employee may sit on any bench whatsoever, be they a former prosecutor or politician, and that such term shall not be for life but for two-year intervals appointed by majority vote of the practicing lawyers in the district within which that person shall preside, there will be no justice, fairness, and rule of law. Ben Franklin argued for adopting the Scottish system where lawyers nominate judges, never government. Marxism must come to an end. The tax code should be prohibited from, one, being a direct tax in any way, eliminating property and income taxes in favor of indirect sales and excise taxes, and two, the Constitution should be restored to its original design. No taxation without the consent of the people, not politicians. This will eliminate so much governmental waste, and then we must eliminate the overregulation. For example, there were more than 10 departments that regulated the banking products, yet the crash of 2007 still took place. We need a single regulatory body, not many. Eliminate the CFTC, folding that into the SEC, and prohibit banks from being brokers. There should be one bank regulatory body and one securities body. That's it. End the layers upon layers of costly when they do not do their job anyway and never prevented a single crash in history. We need stability so that business can knowingly plan for the future. Obama's Jobs Act sounds nice, but how long would this last, even if passed, before it's changed again to raise more money? You would not sign a lease to rent a house where the landlord retains the right to demand more whenever he's short on cash, because he did not manage his own finances. Government has to stop altering the rules every time the political wind changes direction. So much of what we think we know is just wrong. Politicians are fighting over the debt, pontificate theories they do not understand, placing our future in the crosshairs of an economic hitman, while turning the nation into a police state, as the book 1984 warned all, on the pretense we are in danger from 12 guys and a camel. Perhaps we should prevent rape by making all women dress like men or walk around in tents. You do not alter the entire way of life because of a possible act, assuming everyone is now a terrorist. This is always the danger of government, for it sees only its self-interest, and that always entails grabbing more power, eliminating liberty and justice for all. Taxes, in Martin's words here, a barbarous relic of the ancient past. Obama's speech Thursday night threw down the gauntlet and was at last some fighting words akin to the style of Harry Truman. With those words, I hear that we're at the end of the hour. I want to remind everyone to donate generously to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned at noon for Common Sense Revisited with Todd McGreevy. We'll be back in just a minute.
The next round.